We are joined right now by the Vice Chair of the World War I Centennial Committee, Edwin Fountain. Glad to have you here this morning.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Now, the World War I for us at EIA, at Oshkosh, there's not a whole lot of World War I aircraft that exist, but with the centennial coming up, we've seen the new and kind of renewed interest in World War I, especially this year, so we're very happy to have you here. But talk to us a little bit about World War I and why it still remains relevant today.
Well, we think World War I was the most consequential event in American and world history for the last 100 years. Everything changed as a result of World War I. Relative to the air show, obviously aviation was in its infancy,
right.
and 1916, 100 years ago, was really the birth of the American Air Force, with Americans volunteering to fly for the French, and then after the war they switched uniforms and flew for the United States. But beyond that, the world as we know it today was shaped by World War I. World War I saw the collapse of four different empires, and from the ashes of those empires came new nations that in many cases are the sources of conflicts we're dealing with in the world today, whether you're talking Iraq and Syria, or the Ukraine, or the Baltic states, or the Balkans. All those conflicts and tensions were unleashed and have been with us for the last 100 years in one way or another. And so you can't understand the geopolitical stage we live in today without understanding World War I. Domestically, we went from being an agrarian, inward-focused debtor nation at the beginning of the war to being the unquestioned strongest economic and military power in the world after the war, and a very outward-facing nation. We took our place on the international stage. The war had profound consequences for the role of women in society, for the role of African Americans, other ethnic groups, other immigrant groups in society. And of course, World War II was very much an offshoot of World War I. So you can't talk about the 20th century or even the 21st without talking about World War I.
Tell us a little bit about the composition of the committee. Is it international in focus?
We are primarily U.S. focused. We are chartered by Congress. We're a federal commission, although we don't get any taxpayer money. We raise all the funds that support our operations. But our members are appointed by the White House, by the leadership of Congress, and then by the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and the National World War I Museum in Kansas City. We were created in 1913, and we go out of business in 2013, and we go out of business in 2019. And in that period in between, we have two missions, education and commemoration, to raise awareness and consciousness in the United States about this profoundly consequential event, and then to commemorate the service of the 4.7 million American men and women who served in the war and the 116,000 who died.
The education mission, that's partially why you're here this week as well?
That's right. We talk in terms of the commemoration is very American in two respects. One, much of the best work in the commemoration of the war is done from the ground up. And you think of an event like the air show. That is just, this is not a government event. This is done by passionate individuals who are pursuing an interest and building a great program around that on their own initiative. And the second is that people can come to a fuller understanding of World War I through particular areas of interest, whether it's the arts, whether it's military history, whether it's social and cultural history, or in this case, through aviation. Because as I said a few minutes ago, aviation was just beginning in the war, and the technology was advancing by leaps and bounds. The development of air combat tactics and coordination, you know, we take for granted today, sort of combined arms, and the role of aviation in supporting infantry, supporting artillery, all that was just being worked out for the first time in World War I. And so what we hope is by talking about the history of aviation in World War I, we use that as a springboard to get people thinking about World War I more broadly.
What are some of the activities, aside from being here at Oshkosh, some of the other activities that are planned?
Well, we've got three main initiatives. One is a very comprehensive education program that's aimed at reaching 11 million middle school and high school students in the country over the next couple of years. But not just development of school-based curricula. We've got a variety of educational programs really aimed to reach the country at large. Second, we are standing up state centennial commissions in all 56 states and territories. All history is ultimately local, and one way you come to an understanding of the war is to focus on your ancestors, your neighbors, the people from your community who served in the war. And I hope that people here will go back to their hometown and look at that local World War I memorial. And so often they're hidden in plain sight. People drive by them and don't pay them any attention. And so there's a local story to be told. And then third, we have in the nation's capital memorials, national memorials to Vietnam, Korea, and World War II. And the time has come to complete that quartet of memorials to the great wars of the 20th century. And we are in the process of building and raising funds for a national World War I memorial. We have monuments on the Mall to Korea and Vietnam. We lost more men in World War I than we did in those two wars combined. If you look at combat fatalities, we lost 53,000 men in World War I in 6 months of serious fighting. That's more than we lost in all 8 years of the Vietnam War. And so we think it important to honor and recognize that service and sacrifice to the same degree as we do those other wars. Now, this memorial will not receive any taxpayer funds. We'll get no congressional appropriation. So we're dependent on private funding. And certainly encourage your listeners and people here to support us. You can go to our website at ww1cc.org. And then also, we've got a tent down in the Vintage Air section. There's a little bit of a World War I village down there with about 5 World War I aircraft, a Doughboy reenactment camp. And we're in the red and white tent right next to that. And we're selling our World War I Centennial Oshkosh 16 t-shirts, which everyone ought to have. And making information available about our activities.
How is the planning for the memorial going? What stage are we in right now as far as the development of this?
We're still in the design phase. We had an international design competition last year. We drew 350 submissions from around the world, narrowed that down to a group of 5. Those 5 were selected by an independent jury of experts in design and architecture and history. And then the commission selected one of those finalists to move forward. The process of designing and getting design approval of a federal memorial in Washington, D.C. is a complicated one. And we're working our way through that design process as we speak. We're not going to be on the Mall because the Mall has been declared a completed work of civic art. We've got a great spot for the memorial one block from the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue. At a place that's already called Pershing Park, because there's already a memorial to General John Pershing there. So this site will serve as both a park and a memorial, which makes it a little more interesting of a design challenge. But we've a 25-year-old from Arkansas, not even licensed to be an architect yet, won the competition. And he has teamed with one of the leading classical sculptors working in the United States today. Because the centerpiece of this site will be a long bas-relief sculptural depiction of various scenes from the war. So we're moving toward approval of the basic concept for the memorial, and then we'll start working out the details. And then, of course, in the meantime, we're starting our fundraising in earnest.
I find it interesting that a 25-year-old is the one who came up with the winning design. Did that young man have ties to World War II to World War I family, or just an interest in history and memorials?
First of all, he was looking for a competition he could enter.
Okay.
I mean, this is a way that young architects like him can get a reputation and get some notoriety, and so he saw the posting of our competition, and it was really at that point that he started studying about World War I in order to enter the competition. So it's been a great learning opportunity for him, and we're trying to leverage the fact that he's part of the millennial generation to spread his story and attract his cohort. And same with our sculptor. Our sculptor really had not focused on these issues much, but has gotten, he's immersed himself in imagery of World War I and World War I commemoration around the world, and so he has really thrown himself into it. It's a daunting yet very exciting project to come up with something that does justice to that generation.
With you mentioned the approval process, how many agencies or how many layers of government do you have to go through?
There are 4 different agencies we have to satisfy. We sit on the property is on National Park Service property, so they have to issue our permit. There are two different agencies that govern design and urban planning in Washington, D.C. We have to satisfy them. And then we have to go through a historic preservation review process and satisfy the District of Columbia's historic preservation officer. We've been engaged with all those agencies from day one to try to streamline this process, and it's been a good collaborative process.
I'm somewhat familiar with the mall, the White House. Where, you said it was a block from the White House, approximately where?
Just toward the Capitol.
Okay.
If you've got the White House, the Treasury Department, and then us. And if you think of Pennsylvania Avenue as being the great diagonal boulevard between the Capitol and the White House, we are just inside the White House on the Capitol side. We anchor that western end of Pennsylvania Avenue. So there's a tremendous amount of foot traffic of people going to visit the White House. The new Smithsonian Museum of African American History is going on the mall just two blocks away. The site has a great view looking down Pennsylvania Avenue toward the Capitol Dome. It's a very symbolically important place. We've got photographs of the World War I Victory Parade coming along right by that site in 1919 after the war. So it's we're very excited about the location.
And when are you hoping that the memorial will be completed?
In an ideal world, we would dedicate it Armistice Day, Veterans Day, 2018.
Okay,
that's a tight timetable. We'll keep at it as long as we can, but if not, then soon thereafter.
All right, and again, this is all being done with private donations, not government funding. So this is an opportunity for all of us to step up and remember and honor the sacrifices of World War I. And again, if someone wants to become involved, how can they find you on the web?
Sure, the website is www.1cc.org. And the last point I'd make is that by honoring veterans of 100 years ago, we're also telling today's veterans that 100 years from now, they won't be forgotten.
Excellent. Thank you very much for being with us, and enjoy the rest of your time here at Oshkosh. Edward and Fountain, the Vice Chair of the World War I Centennial Committee. You're listening to From the Stand on EIA Radio.